Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in West Bloomfield, Michigan, and earned a JD from Southwestern University's School of Law. From 1996 to 2004, he was an entertainment lawyer in Beverly Hills, California, representing clients in the entertainment, licensing, and marketing industries. He is the founder of M1 Concourse, a $40 million development off Woodward in Pontiac. It's a country club for car buffs. His name, Brad Olshansky. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Brad Olshansky, the founder of M1 Concourse, a $40 million development off Woodward in Pontiac. Brad, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, I grew up in Southfield originally and then West Bloomfield with a great family. My dad was a builder originally and ultimately in the manufacturing supply business. My mother was a school teacher and then a homemaker. And I've got two brothers, a younger and an older brother, who are both here in Michigan as well. We all left town for a while to go to school, and lived in L.A. with my older brother for a long time, and he's back here in Michigan as well now.
What's the biggest thing, Brad, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
From both of them, I think I've learned persistence, perseverance. They both had very good work ethics and very supportive of family. So originally it was all about work for me, and now with family balance, they taught me a lot about that as well. They were around quite a bit as kids, and we did a lot of things together and travel and other things.
You leave West Bloomfield, go to college at Ithaca College in New York. How did you ever get to Hollywood?
It's a great question.
Got a great face for Hollywood, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Ithaca College has one of the most prominent film schools in the country. I wanted to be a filmmaker. I had some relatives in the business and was exposed to that early on in my childhood, and wanted to go to a smaller school versus something like USC or NYU, and found Ithaca through a relative again who was in the industry and had a great experience there, a small liberal arts school in upstate New York. And they had a big connection to Hollywood because many of their graduates had moved out there. And my plan was to move out and make movies. Quickly found out that it's very competitive and tough industry, so I decided to hedge my bets a little and go to law school. What I found early on is that many, many executives in the industry were lawyers, and it kind of dawned on me that that's a way to kind of jump ahead of the competition. So I went out there to a school called Southwestern, which is essentially like a Wayne State here in Detroit, the largest city school, but it's the largest entertainment law program in the country. So their curriculum is based around the, you know, law in general, but specialized on entertainment. And one of the unique things about Southwestern is they help get you a job in the industry during school. So I worked at Disney during my 3 years of law school.
Brad, tell us about your 10-year career as an entertainment lawyer in Beverly Hills, California.
The entertainment industry is a unique industry. I had a phenomenal run and experience there. Started out initially working for a law firm in Beverly Hills for a few years with a great mentor, a guy named Steve Lowy. Focused on clients in the television and music industries. What I did predominantly was work on behalf of families of famous jazz and blues artists, actually. And I was never really a music fan until that time. And we would literally chase bootleggers around the world who were profiting off of the musical talents of these artists who had passed away and not paying the family their due royalties. So I would go to Europe and chase down bootleggers and find the people and basically in exchange for suing them, we would get the master recordings back. And for several years, we were able to accumulate a wide variety of recordings on behalf of the families and then clean them up and then re-release them to record companies. So that was a phenomenal experience. I then went on to the marketing side of the industry doing licensing for several different companies, but all in the toy business. One company made all the toys for Burger King. Another company made all the toys for McDonald's. And I was the guy who did all the deals with the movie studios to license the properties for those toys. And you know, the last company I worked for in that industry was called Simon Marketing. We made a billion toys a year for 10 years. So it was a very interesting industry.
What's it like living and working in Hollywood?
I found it to be a great experience, although I moved back here because I didn't want to raise my kids in L.A. It's a fast-paced industry, tons of excitement. Obviously, there's all the celebrity aspects and events that are fun to go to. But it's a unique challenge every day there because it's not just being a lawyer in the area I worked in. It's, you know, you're dealing with people's personal lives, their business lives, and very complex transactions in an industry that's known for taking advantage of artists and talent. So I was fortunate to work for the guy I mentioned before, Steve Lowy, and his philosophy was always, you know, don't let the art chase the commerce, let the commerce chase the art. And he was very successful in propping artists up to tell them, focus on your art and the money will come. And the opposite was seen with many people, and those people were not often successful, maybe for temporary success. So it was a really interesting lesson I had with that experience.
From 2004 through 2008, you were the COO of Big Communications. Tell us about that company.
Yeah, so Big started out as Big Productions when I moved here in 2004 to work with three people that had founded the company many years before. They had just broken into the healthcare space, and clients were amazed that there's a company in Michigan. All the clients were East Coast, generally, pharmaceutical and biotech companies, and clients were amazed that they could deliver such incredible customer service and innovation in an industry that was not so innovative. So we basically reinvented the industry of creating sales materials for drug reps, and it was a print-based industry forever, and we brought them into the digital age with very interactive sales tools and stuff that was on iPads and tablet PCs and various things, and it was a very fast-paced growing business for us. We were the first to enter that field and kind of reinvent that category. Now it's the state of the art for the industry.
In 2004, they had 5 employees with less than $1 million in revenue. You grew the thing over 4 or 5 years to 125 people with $30 million in revenue. How'd you do it?
Well, I always like to, you know, talk about the team. It was really about the team, and our big differentiator was being here in Michigan. We really had no clients in Michigan, so we commuted a lot back and forth to the East and West Coast. But the one thing clients said about our team was they were the easiest people to deal with and always went over and above for the client. And we also have very creative talent. Many of our people came out of the automotive industry and, we're always looking to get out of automotive because, you know, jobs had changed. The environment had changed here in Detroit. So we were a healthcare opportunity in interactive and digital and creative, you know, creative media still here in Detroit, but working in a different industry. So the growth of our company was a result of incredible talent here based in Detroit, plus an industry that was undergoing significant change, and they really saw the value and the type of deliverables we created.
We're talking to Brad Olshansky, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul. And with Brad Olshansky. Brad, I quote you now, innovation isn't just one thing, it's everything.
That is my mantra. I think some people say innovate or die, but you got to keep pushing the envelope of what's possible. What I found in my career so far is that, and you know, oftentimes you get pigeonholed. If you're a lawyer, they're like, you're a lawyer. But that's one thing I found in Hollywood is because I was often had the title of lawyer, the creators would say, stay out of the meeting, you're the lawyer, until I could actually demonstrate that I could bring ideas to the table. And, you know, I was always about doing something that was not the status quo and trying new things. And sometimes it worked out. Other times, the employers were not pleased with that because people, oftentimes the industry, the entertainment industry in particular, is, you know, kind of likes the status quo. But I found places that would allow me to push the envelope of innovation. And that's what I've done throughout my career, and especially with my current project, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
We're going to talk about right now.
Oh, great.
M1 Concourse, where did you ever come up with the idea?
So I grew up around cars. My dad was a hot rodder car builder, and I was always working on cars in our garage growing up. And he would let me drive in the car if I polished the chrome, and ultimately let me drive them in high school, which was great. But since I've been back here, when I moved back here in 04, I was always fascinated by the growth of the Dream Cruise event and the fact that there's so many classic and exotic and muscle cars in town here. And every event I went to was very disorganized and not super creative or put on very well, or and ultimately not monetized. What you hear from all these events is we don't know how to make money, and the parking lots we go to, no one wants us there, and the cities don't want to support this. And even though we're in Detroit, I was like, this is all about cars, and there's no one that's figured out a way to aggregate that audience and really to monetize it. Was my initial concept was, how do you really monetize that audience? And I spent a lot of time, a lot of research, looking around the world to see what other cities had car scenes and what did they do with that audience. And I found out in Europe there's a whole, I never even heard of it, but there's a whole concept called car condominiums, very growing trend, and started to come to the U.S. here. Basically, it's a storage solution initially, but what people quickly find out is it's more about a community. And these facilities get built where people can not only keep their cars and boats and other toys or collectibles, but a place with, you know, to hang out with other people with the same passion. So I also looked at racetracks and theme parks and museums and all types of other things related around hobbies and passions, mainly around cars. And some I found to be viable, some I did not. And I landed on car condos and said, you know, there's a need in the marketplace for storage, but also people we know want to hang out with each other. So I went down the path of looking to find land to build a car condo community, 6 to 8 acres, and couldn't find anything. Everything was either too expensive or not zoned properly or not in the right area. And one day, a gentleman I work with now named Matt Zerbrick, he said, there's this piece of property on the corner of Woodward and South in Pontiac, just north of Bloomfield Hills. It's 87 acres, it's massive, and there's a for sale sign on it. So I looked up the seller, turned out to be a trust called the Racer Trust, I never heard of. Now I know it was a federal government trust created when General Motors went bankrupt. And I quickly learned that you couldn't just buy the land. You had to pitch the government on your idea, because they were mandated to find unique users for these many GM properties that were in great locations, but had the chance to revitalize communities. And it was really interesting to me, even though all my friends who are in real estate said to me, you'll never win the bid because you're not a real estate person. You're not a developer and you have no track record. I was confident in my idea, really initially about car condos and a destination and a place for the public to come hang out. And they loved the idea. And then I quickly found out that I had 87 acres instead of 8 or 10 or 6 or 8 acres. And I started to meet with the car industry, folks from General Motors and Ford and Chrysler and a lot of aftermarket suppliers. And the first thing many people said was, what about a track? What about a track? What about a track? And I said, well, don't you have proving grounds? And they said, no, we do, but proving grounds are generally reserved for engineering purposes and are often highly confidential, and we don't want the public coming there. We rent private facilities for marketing and training and consumer engagement purposes. So if you had a track there, it'd be very interesting for us to utilize that facility. So the property then quickly expanded, or the concept expanded from car condos to a performance track. And then the bigger audience are people that, you know, own these cars. And Detroit has 62,000 plus classic, exotic, and muscle car owners, which is way bigger than any other market. You know, people say to me, oh, isn't Los Angeles the biggest market? Los Angeles is not even close to Detroit in terms of the collectible cars. So, you know, with the plans of car condos, we only have, you know, the ability to build several hundred of them. The bigger audience are the people that want to come and hang out and show off their car and come to a car event and have a meal. So we've got a whole experiential retail destination on the corner of the property on Woodward and South.
If you want to learn more, www.m1concourse.com. Brad, every Saturday morning about 8:30, I drive down Woodward, right before, just north of 14 Mile, and there's this Pastener's place that holds about 50 cars or so. and it's 5 degrees, 10 degrees, it's snowing, it's raining. Every Saturday morning, the place is loaded with these car buffs with their antique classic cars. What do they talk about?
And that's just one location. There's, I could take you to 20 every Saturday morning, every night of the week, in that one in particular, which is one of the most popular, great location. It's the who's who of the car industry, but it's also enthusiasts from people that have $1 million cars to, you know, $3,000 Volkswagen Beetles. And that's the beauty of the whole scene. This hobby, just like many other passions or hobbies, doesn't matter where you're from. There's no economic barriers. There's no racial barriers. You talk about cars, and you talk about engineering. You talk about design. You talk about how fast you can go. You talk about the parts you just bought. You talk about anything and everything related to this passion. And people, just like several other hobbies, people spend all of their extra time on their cars and looking for parts and looking for history. And it's amazing. I mean, you can go there and for hours and talk. The interesting thing, and the reason that we're, you know, building the M1 Concourse and why I think it's going to be incredibly viable, is that facility only holds 50 cars. And all the other retailers in that strip mall there want everybody gone by 10 because they want to conduct business. And up and down Woodward, there's hundreds of parking lots where small events happen, but the police push you out or the owners of the property push you out, and there's no large facility that's purpose-built for that exact thing to happen.
Brad, what makes Woodward Avenue so unique in all of America?
Well, Woodward is the first paved highway in America. Obviously, because the car industry was birthed here, you've got the history from the beginning of time in Detroit with all the auto companies and factories being built around the core of Detroit, and then growing out to the suburbs. As the movement went out to the suburbs, you look at all the big car companies that moved out. So along the way, people populated the various cities up and down Woodward, and it was the main drag. And if you know, obviously you know about the 50s and 60s and the places like the Totem Pole and Ted's and those drive-in diner concepts, which were birthed on Woodward as well. Those were essentially the equivalent of what I'm doing, and we're doing it on a much larger scale, but those were very popular, and they kind of went by the wayside as strip malls became popular, and no one wanted to give up that valuable land for a parking lot, and people had to find other ways to hang out with each other and congregate. We're going to recreate that in a much larger scale.
We're talking to Brad Olszewski, the founder of M1 Concourse, which is a country club for car buffs. And I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasool, and we're with Brad Olszewski. Brad, how do you explain the miracle known as the Woodward Dream Cruise?
The Woodward Dream Cruise is a phenomenon. It's the largest, used to be single-day event for car fanatics in the world. It's now stretches out for weeks before. I think it's just like I said in the last segment, the car culture is embedded in people's lives here. It's the history of our town, and, this is what people do. They want to go see, they want to drive their cars, they want to show off their vehicles, they want to see other people's cars and collections and the way they've customized their cars. And the Dream Cruise is the embodiment of that. Looking through all the different cities all along Woodward, they've, attempted to bring that crowd together. It's not the most cohesive event, but it is a designated event where all these people can come. And now what's happened over the years is it grows every year. And you find people coming from around the world. I mean, I met a guy last year that shipped in a car from Australia just for Dream Cruise. They want to be part of that scene. And they want to, this is about showing off your whatever it is. And like I said, it could be a $2 million car. It could be a $2,000 car.
You mentioned in the previous segment that you bought these 87 acres from the federal government, which is not the easiest thing to do. How did you ever convince them on this concept?
Simply put, my pitch to them was, this is an auto project on an auto site in an auto town. It's not something that doesn't make sense. There's many other ideas that have been done on properties all around town that are not viable because they're not based on people's ordinary lives here in Detroit, or they're based on a concept that is fleeting in nature or is not supported by, you know, the community. So, you know, they love the idea as an opportunity. It's such a key location. It's really the gateway to Pontiac. You know, it's right next to Bloomfield Hills. And Pontiac's, the government's philosophy, and, you know, with Pontiac's support, was we can drive traffic north to Pontiac. Pontiac has an incredible opportunity for revitalization. They've had a lot of false starts over the last many years. But really, right now, because of this property, you can really drive traffic north. You know, the car scene generally has turned around at Square Lake. We're, you know, we're just a mile north, or an intersection north. And, you know, it's a, you couldn't ask for a better location for it.
Speaking of location, Brad, we've got Woodward on the east. We've got Franklin on the west. We've got South Boulevard on the south. It's a triangle-shaped 87 acres, various phases. Tell us about the various phases.
So it's 80 acres on the main site. We actually own a property south of South Boulevard as well, which will be a large parking lot, 7 acres. But on the 80-acre site, it is a multi-phase development. Phase one happens to be very, very significant. We are going to clear the entire site, crush all the concrete from the existing foundation from the various factories that were there for 100 years. The factories were torn down several years ago, but they left the foundations in place. We will crush all that concrete. We will level out the property. We'll keep some of the topography. There's some nice topography on the site. And phase one includes, after the site work, we're going to construct a minimum of 80 private garages or car condos, the mile-and-a-half performance track, which is essentially a mini road course that many of those garages sit right on. That's a private gated community. The corner of Woodward and South, about 10 acres of it, will be a public, open to the public, retail and restaurant destination. And there we'll start with our first commercial building of 40,000 square feet approximately, which will have a restaurant, some commercial space for storefronts like car dealers and ice cream shop and a coffee shop. As well as some event space that sits on the pit lane on the back of the building. And the second story of that building is office space. Additionally, the third component, which is kind of on the east side of the property, in the middle of the property, where the railroad tracks cross Woodward, there is one existing warehouse building that was left on the property. It's about 25,000 square feet, and we're going to redevelop that building for office and performance shop space for a few tenants.
$10 million upfront site work. Your plan is to break ground by June 1st. Phase one, 80 garages. Brad, have you sold any of them yet?
Yes. The answer is yes. And the challenging part about this project is the, you know, full financial or capital stack to get this project done. It's very significant because of that $10 million of upfront site work. So we took the approach of pre-selling the garages to see what success we'd have to determine the viability of it in this marketplace. No one's ever pre-sold this product. Usually they build one building, another building, another building. And every other project in the country is on a greenfield site out on a farm somewhere outside of a city. The benefit that we have is we're right on Woodward. We're right in the middle of the city. And to answer the question specifically, we have in less than 4 months sold 65 of these private garages. And when I say sold, it's signed purchase agreements, and we require one-third of the money down for these garages.
So you have 15 left. The average price of the garage so far has been $200,000.
Yes.
This is an auto enthusiast's destination. When do you hope to actually be open?
So based on our construction schedule, we're planning to be open about a year from now, spring of 16, and that will include the 80 garages and the track. The track is definitely part of phase one, and the first commercial building on the corner open to the public with the restaurant and retail is planned as part of that phase, as well as some of the office I talked about. So we will be aggressively under construction throughout the year, and right now we're on track for that early June date.
You mentioned that there's 62,000-plus classic cars in Metro Detroit. Talk about those owners.
The owners are everyone you can think of. And if you go any building in town here, you're going to see a car in someone's office, warehouse, garage, their friend's garage, storage facilities, cars are piled up everywhere. And, you know, most people have one or two extra cars if they're into the hobby. Many people have cars that were passed down to them. And there's collectors here that, you know, once you get the bug, you start acquiring more and more. I mean, I could, every day I meet people with 5, 10, 20, 30, 40. I just was at someone's garage at 230. And these people are the full gamut of very successful executives, entrepreneurs, working class people, you know, a lot of automotive industry people that worked in the factory. And when they were there in the factory in the 60s or 70s, they bought an employee car for $3,000. It's now worth $100,000 because, you know, knowing that they were hobbyists, they kept that car perfect condition. They never drove it. The stuff you see now is incredible. And what's interesting about these people and the cars is almost across the board, the cars have become more valuable. There was an article recently in one of the major newspapers that collectible cars are the number one asset class. There's 850% appreciation of classic cars over the last 10 years. It's higher than modern art, which is higher than the stock market. So you really can't go wrong with cars. Where you can go wrong is you buy a car and sell it 2-3 years later. But if you hold any vehicle, I'm sure there's some outliers. They're not the best things to buy. But almost across the board, any car you hold for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years is going to make money.
Brad, if I buy one of these garages, what do I get?
So you get to live your dream. The garages come as finished white box space, or upgraded white box, we say. So it's finished and painted drywall. It comes with all the electrical, plumbing, lighting, the garage door and opener, and a heating system. So you could literally use it day one. What most people will do to their garage is based on the buyers so far, as well as looking at other projects around the country, is they will decorate them very elaborately. They will include second story or construct second story mezzanines, bathrooms, kitchens, bars, anything that's, you know, that helps them sort of entertain themselves with their family and friends. It's more of a entertainment destination than it is a storage facility.
If you want to learn more, www.m1concourse.com. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Brad Olashensky, founder of M1 Concourse. Brad, these men and women, there's women that bought garages already, who are not car buffs, what will they do all day?
These garages will be used for anything from working on vehicles to entertaining friends and family. We have a lot of buyers that are auto industry executives and companies who view this as like a place to have a hospitality suite, just like you have a suite at a stadium, except for they can actually put their product in it, take their customers on a track and show off their product. We've got people that are buying these to create museums for their collectibles. We just sold a garage to a gentleman who's got a collection of model ships. We sold the garage to a woman who wants to use it as a place to do charity events and dinner parties. We have a lot of people who use it for satellite offices, so people that have businesses in outlying areas to have a private space. People use it for offsites for their employees, brainstorming sessions. There's the options are endless.
Ultimately, 325 condos. But you also talk about restaurants, retail space, et cetera.
Yeah, we believe the real big opportunity, in addition to the private garages, is the corner of the property, which is open to the public. And that's creating a destination where people can enjoy their passion, whether or not you own a garage. You know, every night of the week, we're going to program that. And every weekend, you know, Thursday night could be the Mustang night. Friday night could be the motorcycle night. Saturday could be a launch of a GM vehicle. We can have cars on the track. Our restaurant overlooks the track. There's no other restaurant like it, I don't think, in the country where you've got a rooftop patio overlooking a pit lane and a track where there'll be tons of action. So just I think that's going to grow to be the coolest place in Metro Detroit to bring friends and family and hang out, and cars will just be a main part of it.
We're talking to Brad Olashensky. Brad, when you get ready to write your book, the title could be From Hollywood to Pontiac. Do you miss Tinseltown?
I do. I go back often. I miss the, you know, the energy, which I'm starting to see here, actually. It's interesting. Even in Pontiac, when I started this project, there were a lot of naysayers. There was a lot of negativity. But there's a lot of energy kind of bookending the suburbs here. You've got all the stuff happening in Detroit, which is incredible. And that energy is spilling over into Pontiac. We were literally out of the bookend. You know, what's unique about Pontiac is surrounded by suburbs that are all in very good condition or much better condition than Pontiac. And Pontiac's on the upswing. And now with developments like M1 Concourse and, you know, there's restaurants coming to downtown Pontiac like Slow's, which has an incredible track record of redeveloping area around them. Private tennis clubs, ultimate soccer. There's all kinds of activities. So
the Strand Theater is being
Strand
renovated.
Theater, yeah.
Okay, I quote you now. Pontiac is the biggest hidden gem in all of Michigan. It's a donut hole surrounded by wealth.
Yes, I think as an opportunity for investors, and obviously I'm focused on M1 Concourse, but I think it's a hidden gem, like you just said. And, you know, the location is incredible. You're literally surrounded by where the population moved over many years and all the corporations. Even with all the great things happening in Detroit, it is a super convenient location for people to come to, whether you've got a business, you want to hang out on a property like ours with a you know, the car scene. But downtown Pontiac is ripe for incredible redevelopment, and we're starting to see that happen.
Tell us, Brad, what Pontiac will be like in 2025.
I think Pontiac will be like a lot of other urban areas around the country that have had a real solid redevelopment. Pontiac definitely needs some champions, and I'm one of them, but we need many more. Places like Baltimore have had an incredible resurgence, places that people thought would never come back. Pontiac, as I said, the fundamentals are there. It's so close to where people live. So if you think about Pontiac, what I think Pontiac really becomes, and it's completely tied in with M1 Concourse, and we'll be the trailblazers in this respect, is a restaurant and entertainment destination with housing as a byproduct. And hopefully we'll revitalize the neighborhoods around it by creating jobs for all of these entities. But I think some of the most successful redevelopments that I've seen and studied become entertainment, experiential retail destinations. And if you think about all the cool buildings in downtown Pontiac, you know, you could have 25 restaurants there. I actually think it could be sooner than 2025. I think Slow's is going to be a domino effect. My project and several others, you know, you're asking people to drive 10 minutes up the road or 10 minutes down the road and, you know, in a very cool setting. So I think it's an incredible opportunity.
Through the years of this show, we've had on a number of guests from out of town who have come in here, entrepreneurs, risk takers. And what they see in Southeast Michigan is unbelievable opportunity, whereas most of us have seen all the negative. What's the key for us to see the opportunity like you outsiders see the opportunity?
I think the key is to really drill down into the fundamentals and not listen to all the noise. There's, you know, there's people in society that are just negative in general, and they spread negativity and talk about it and post things on comments and online, and people hide behind a veil of social media now, and that negativity is pervasive. It's when you drill down to fundamentals. You know, Pontiac, when I started this project, everyone said, oh, Pontiac's terrible, it's corrupt, you'll never get this done. I found completely the opposite. Everyone has open arms and welcomed me and this project, have rolled out the red carpet for us, have moved mountains to get us the approvals we needed. And you know, people say Pontiac's so dangerous, you know, I would never come there. Well, again, you know, Pontiac's biggest problem, I think, is PR. They don't have the resources to tell the story. Pontiac's crime is down like something like 90% in the last several years. Oakland County Sheriff took over Pontiac a couple years ago during the reorganization. There's very little crime in Pontiac. Less crime in Pontiac, I'm told, than in Birmingham and Bloomfield. Obviously, the population numbers are a little different, but there's not a lot of crime. I've been there every day for the last 2 years. I've had no issue, and I've been through every part of the city, and all I've had is nothing but people saying, this is great. Come, bring people. We want to help you. How can we help? I've had residents donate their time, and it's completely opposite of what everyone told me.
If you want to learn more, www.m1concourse.com. You're a master. You thrive on overcoming obstacles and setbacks. How can we do that?
It's an interesting question. you know, it's been a long road for me to have the mindset of doing that, because it's easy to kind of fall into the trap of it can't be done, or people tell you, oh, that's too hard. I actually have gotten to a point now where I'm fired up by challenge and people saying that can't be done. I'm kind of the nature, like, I want to prove you wrong. And so far it's worked out in most cases for me. I think it is really a mindset of, and it goes back to what I said about one of my mentors, Steve Lowy. You know, people are oftentimes starting with, how much money can I make? And just like college kids coming out of college today, they're always looking for the, how much money can I make? And I want to blanket the world with resumes. You know, what I find is, if you start by focusing on what am I trying to accomplish, and not worry about the money so much, and lend your time, donate your time. I mean, my first job, and the only reason I got my first job at Disney was because I was competing against people from way better schools. But I said to the woman interviewing me, she said, well, how do you compare it to people from Harvard and Yale and Princeton coming out of Southwestern University? I said, the only way I compare is I have my own computer and I work for free. And she said, you're hired. So I tell kids all the time that that's what you got to focus on. And, you know, not everyone can, you know, do that, but you got to try and lend your time and whatever it takes to help someone out. They will then see the benefit of working with you, and then the money will come.
Speaking of telling kids, as our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
The advice I'd give to young listeners is to, you know, try and follow your passion. I didn't do that. I started out doing that, and then it kind of veered off course in terms of the industry, the type of work I was doing, although it became very interesting to me. But what I found and why this project evolved is, you know, it's tied to my passion for cars and the enthusiast market. But really, you know, again, back to the point of people are so focused on how much money can I make and careers and paying the bills. You know, they lose sight of, you know, what is going to be enjoyable. And you'd meet people every day that hate their jobs, and it's such a grind, and it's so boring. Well, you know, I think if you really focus on what your passions are, whatever they may be, and you can really zone in on that and spend time doing that, there are careers to be built around your passions. And obviously with the, you know, millennial generation and you know, different mindsets of kids coming out of schools today, we're seeing more of that. We're seeing kids that want to go into, you know, social causes. It's almost the flip side. Now people don't even care about making money, and they're going into things that are not as viable. But somewhere in the balance there, there's a tremendous opportunity to have people have enjoyable lives with careers that are, you know, make them happy.
He's the Dan Gilbert of Pontiac. Brad Olszewski, thanks for coming back. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom. Believe in